for the Alagos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. The Alagos Radio with Michael Nevaralekis begins now. We kicked off today's broadcast with Pandelis Thalassinos and a song Me Karavia Chiotica. This is the Alagos Radio, the weekly Greek radio program which bridges the worldwide Greek community, airing each week on 20 radio stations across 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. My name is Michael Nevradakis, and on today's program, the Alagos interview series will feature an exclusive interview with prominent international lawyer and professor Francis Boyle, who is one of the lawyers who took George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Tony Blair, and others to international court on charges of war crimes and torture, resulting in their conviction in absentia. Boyle will discuss this case and its aftermath, the ongoing war crimes being perpetuated in the Middle East region, the Ukraine, and beyond, and he will also discuss the case of Greece's national debt and the memorandum agreements that its governments have signed, and whether this debt and these agreements are even legal under international law. Following today's interview, we will feature our Commentary of the Week segment, and that will be followed up by a special musical segment featuring songs written by Greek and international artists in solidarity with the refugees entering Greece and the Greek people who have helped support these refugees. Coming up right now, though, is the Diálogos interview series and our interview with international lawyer and professor Francis Boyle here on Diálogos Radio. The Diálogos interview series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Diálogos Radio. Joining us today on Diálogos Radio and the Diálogos interview series is international lawyer and professor of international law at the University of Illinois, Dr. Francis Boyle. Boyle has served as legal counsel to the Palestinian Authority, to Hawaiian independence groups, and has served on a legal team which led to the conviction of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney for war crimes. Professor Boyle, welcome to our program today.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, and my best to all my friends in Greece, great country, great people. Spent about 2 weeks traveling around in 1974 and another 2 weeks traveling around in August was 1982. So
wonderful. Well, let's get started by talking about the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Commission and the case which led to the conviction of George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Alberto Gonzalez, and others in absentia for war crimes. Tell us about this commission and about this case that you were a part of, as well as its aftermath.
Well, there were two different proceedings. The first one was against Bush and Tony Blair for their war of aggression and Nuremberg crime against peace against Iraq. And I was part of the team that helped get a unanimous conviction there. And then the second proceeding was against Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rice, Gonzalez, and several others for torture and war crimes. And again, I was part of the team that helped get unanimous conviction, both for torture and war crimes. Those materials have been filed with the International Criminal Court, and I'm doing the best I can to follow up on my own, tracking these people and staying in touch with other lawyers to see if we can get them apprehended. Bush was about to go to Switzerland, and a Swiss parliamentarian, aware of my work, demanded that the Swiss prosecutor general apprehend and prosecute Bush for torture and war crimes under the domestic implementing legislation for the Rome Statute for the International Criminal Court. So when word got back to Bush, he didn't go to Switzerland. So that's, you know, the way I'm proceeding, and other international human rights experts. I'm not the only one out there. I know the Center for Constitutional Rights in New York is involved. I believe Amnesty International is involved, and there's some other human rights lawyers I stay in contact with around the world. So we'll keep after these people the best we can.
Now, let's look more closely at the role of United States foreign policy, its military, and the role of NATO in the world today. Almost 8 years ago, President Obama came to office promising to shut down Guantanamo Bay, promising to right the wrongs of the Bush administration, but instead, we've seen Guantanamo remain open, we've seen U.S. military involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan and the Middle East continue, and we've seen the growth of military operations using unmanned drones in Yemen and elsewhere. How does international law view the actions of the Obama administration in the United States today?
Well, actually, I wrote a book that comprehensively covered all the violations of international law, human rights, the laws of war, and United States constitutional law by the Bush Jr. administration called Tackling America's Toughest Questions. And in the conclusion, I wrote the conclusion and 3 weeks after Obama was inaugurated. And in the conclusion, I said it looked like we very well might be getting a third Bush term. And that's what we've gotten here. Two more Bush terms under Obama. He's pretty much continued the Bush policies, both abroad and here at home. Compounding and continuing the Bush police state here in the United States. So at some point, I guess I'll get around to writing a book on the Obama administration's violations of international law. But in the meantime, you could read my book on the Bush violations, Tackling America's Toughest Questions. And he's basically continued the same policies.
We are on the air with international law expert Francis Boyle here on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. Years ago, he had written about the plans of the United States, the European Union, and NATO for the Ukraine and indeed for the world, with a stated goal of destroying specific states and listing seven countries that were slated to be taken over. What were those plans and have they come into fruition?
Yes, they have. In my book, The Criminality of Nuclear Deterrence, I have in there a statement by Deputy Secretary of Defense Wolfowitz made right after 9/11/2001 that the United States government was going to get into the business of destroying states. And I analyzed that and said it's genocidal. And then soon thereafter, NATO General Wesley Clark was in the Pentagon. And he was told they had a list of seven Muslim states that they were going to destroy. And basically, they've all been taken out now, except for Iran. They've destroyed Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, Somalia, Yemen. Lebanon has been pretty much paralyzed. And they lopped off South Sudan from Sudan. So that process continues, and now they're moving toward Ukraine and China. I'm sorry, they're moving toward Russia from Ukraine and also China. They're moving to directly confront China.
Is there, in your view, any political candidate, any political force in the United States at the present time that can put an end to this foreign policy into the U.S. military machine overseas? For instance, there's many progressives who have placed their hope in Bernie Sanders as the man to do this. Is this hope misguided, in your view?
Well, I'm not going to criticize Senator Sanders here. I dealt with him personally, so okay. But everyone had the same hope about Obama during his campaign. Now, Obama was behind me at Harvard Law School, and he moved to the Hyde Park area in Chicago there with the University of Chicago, where I was an undergraduate. So I had my own sources up there in Chicago, and they told me not to trust Obama. So I never have. And indeed, I didn't vote for him two times in a row. And I was not deluded by Obama, which is why I said three weeks into his inauguration, into his administration, in my book, Tackling America's Toughest Question, it looked to me like we were going to get a third Bush term. Well, you know, hope springs eternal. Bernie Sanders will actually do something. I don't know. Hillary Clinton is a psychopath and a war criminal. Quote, we came, we saw, he died, unquote, referring to mimicking Julius Caesar and then laughing hysterically after Colonel Gaddafi, my former client, was sodomized with a knife and beaten to death. So, you know, she's a certified psychopath and war criminal. As for the Republicans, none of them look very good at all between you and me. So I guess maybe Senator Sanders might make a difference. The last time around, I did support Jill Stein of the Green Party. I thought she was the best candidate and had the best platform. But unfortunately, the Greens, with all due respect to them, didn't really get themselves organized and accomplish anything. So there we are here in America. What can I say?
We are speaking with international law expert Francis Boyle here on Lealogos Radio and the Lealogos interview series. The ongoing and worsening conflict in Syria and all across the Middle East has led to a tremendous wave of refugees fleeing their homelands and traveling under treacherous conditions to Europe, with Greece often serving as the European entry point for these refugees. What do you make of the European Union's stance toward the refugee crisis and the stance of the international community as well? And what does international law foresee in such circumstances?
Right. Well, all these refugees are fleeing because the United States government has been destroying their states, as we've already discussed. Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, Yemen, and Libya, you know, accounts for most of them. So that's why they are fleeing. An outright terror of the aggression, war crimes, genocide, crimes against humanity that the United States government is inflicting upon them. With respect to Europe, everyone there in Europe, all the states are parties to the UN Refugees Convention. That's the international law. Unfortunately, it appears that they're going to be making Greece the scapegoat for all this and confining all these refugees in Greece, if you're reading the plans here, which is completely unfair. I don't know exactly how to advise Greece to deal with this situation. The refugee convention is there, but you're being made the scapegoat for American policies here. And Europe is going along with it.
You have written and spoken extensively about growing Israeli belligerence in the Middle East and about the Palestinian right of return. How does international law view Israeli actions in a region, such as the continued construction of settlements? And how can the Palestinian people defend their homeland and their sovereignty from a legal point of view?
Well, I've written three books on this: Palestine, Palestinians, and International Law, Breaking All the Rules, and the Palestinian right of return under international law. So I'm not going to go through all of them. But basically what we have here is outright genocide being perpetrated by Israel against the Palestinians with the full support of the United States government. And that is what confronts us today as citizens of the world community. Israel wants all of Palestine, and they don't want any Palestinians there. So it's going to get worse. I've given the best advice I can to the Palestinian leadership. I work with them to get them up to the point where they are now a United Nations observer state. I have devised a means whereby they can overcome Obama's threatened veto of their membership, full-fledged state membership in the United Nations. And I have also offered to sue Israel at the International Court of Justice in The Hague, the World Court, for inflicting genocide against them and trying to stop it, the settlements, the genocidal siege of of Gaza. So the Palestinian leadership has my recommendations and offer to help. In the meantime, I'm doing everything I can do here. I was the one who set off the Israeli divestment disinvestment campaign in November of 2000. And then in 2005, the Palestinian civil society contacted me and asked me if I would go in with them on a BDS campaign, which I agreed to do. So the BDS campaign has taken off now all over the world. And I would encourage your listeners to work with the Palestinian BDS campaign for sure. It's having an impact.
This is the Alawis Radio. We will return after a short break.
Ξαναγύρισες, συγγνώμη να μου ζητήσεις. Κι απάνω που σε λησμόνησα, ό,τι μου κάνες να μου θυμίσεις. Αγάπη μου επικίνδυνη, φοβάμαι και τη σκιά σου. Ερείπιο με κατάντησες με τον άπιστο τον ερώτα σου. Ερείπιο με κατάντησες με τον άπιστο τον ερώτα σου. Για πειράματα να φύγεις και να μ' αφήσεις. Δεν έχω πια άλλο τίποτα, μόνο ερείπια για να γκρεμίσεις. Αγάπη μου επικίνδυνη, φοβάμαι και τη σκιά σου. Με τον άπιστο τον ερώτα σου. Ερείπιο με κατάντησες με τον άπιστο τον ερώτα σου.
We now return to the Diálogos interview series here on Diálogos Radio. We are on the air with international law expert Francis Boyle here on Diálogos Radio and the Diálogos interview series. Having mentioned Israel and the Middle East, this past summer the Greek government signed an agreement with the Armed Forces of Israel, a so-called Status of Forces Accord, which Israel has apparently signed with only one other country in the world, the United States. What does this accord mean, and what do you make of the Greek government's efforts to forge closer ties with Israel?
Well, I haven't read this document, so I don't think I should comment on a document I haven't read. But it is very unfortunate to see Greece move towards working hand in glove with Israel when you did have a previous history there of supporting the Palestinians. And I think the Greek people need to make it clear to the current Syriza government that you're not going to accept this at all, and you want the Greek government to go back and support the Palestinians.
You used to be a member of the board of Amnesty International USA back in the late 80s and early 1990s. However, you have since turned into a fierce critic of NGOs, such as Amnesty International. Describe for us the relationship that exists between such NGOs and power structures in Washington and elsewhere.
Well, yes, these Western NGOs, and you probably have some of them there in Greece, all operate on the basic principle, he who pays the piper calls the tune. There's nothing objective, neutral, or dispassionate about any of them, including and especially Human Rights Watch, the International Committee of the Red Cross. I could go down an entire list of these NGOs. So they're really not there to help you and the people of Greece. You might have your own internal Greek NGOs that get money from Greek sources. That's a different matter. So you have to be very careful with these NGOs. For example, this summer, Amnesty International adopted a resolution to the effect that it was going to promote the sex industry and sex trade on a worldwide basis, which I did my best to stop. I read the documents in support of this, and it all went back to George Soros' documentation to support it. So it seems that Soros must have made a very big contribution to Amnesty International to get this reprehensible policy rammed through their headquarters in London and then Amnesty worldwide. I take it Soros must have some type of investments in the sex industry. You know, he's a hedge fund manager. And then, you know, Soros gave $100 million to Human Rights Watch. So you can figure it out from there. But it's true for all these Western NGOs.
We are speaking with international law expert Francis Boyle here on Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. Your outspoken criticism of U.S. foreign policy against Israel and also on issues such as being in favor of independence for Hawaii and for many other issues has put you on the radar of the FBI and other intelligence agencies. Describe for us an encounter you had with the FBI about a decade ago.
Yes, one day, agents of the FBI and the CIA showed up my office, misrepresented to my secretary who they were and what they were about. I let them into my office. They proceeded to interrogate me for 1 hour and tried to get me to become an informant against my Muslim clients, which I refused to do, repeatedly refused. So they went out then and put me on all the United States government's terrorist watch lists. According to my lawyer, there are six or seven of them. And as far as he could figure out, I was put on all of them. And my lawyer did appeal, but he was told I would remain on all these watch lists until the FBI and the CIA take me off, which, of course, is not going to happen in my lifetime. He did make it possible for me to travel, but there we are.
Now, let's turn to Greece one more time. Over the past 6 years, successive Greek governments, including the supposedly leftist Syriza government, have signed a series of memorandum agreements which have not only imposed harsh economic austerity, which have not only resulted in a privatization and sell-off of key public assets, but which have also essentially signed away, at least on paper, Greece's sovereignty. The European Union and the Troika have final approval rights over key legislation that is brought before the Greek parliament, while the memorandum agreements have been placed under the legal authority of the United Kingdom and Luxembourg. Are such agreements valid under international law, and what could Greece do to restore the country's sovereignty? Are there any precedents in international law that Greece could turn to?
Right. Well, it does appear that Syriza has abandoned and betrayed the Greek people and the promises it had made originally to get elected. You know, you're asking me this question for the first time, but certainly one could use an argument of economic duress and threats and coercion under the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties to try to claw back some of these agreements that Syriza has made. As for this debt that you're on, there is a well-known doctrine under international law known as odious debt that I think Greece could consider to repudiate a good deal of this debt. I haven't studied, you know, the elements of the Greek debt, but it does appear there are more than enough elements there that could be repudiated as odious debt. And then finally, clearly, Germany owes massive reparations to Greece for the Nazi occupation and war crimes in Greece during World War II. They still have not paid up. And I think the Greek government or the Greek people need to insist on that. And that gives you a lot of leverage against Germany, which is really the most powerful country in Europe now and is pretty much calling all the shots here. And I think there the Greek people understand this. So you have a lot of leverage, but regretfully, the Syriza government hasn't used it.
Are the examples of countries such as Iceland or Argentina possible precedents that could be used in the case of Greece?
Well, Iceland's pretty small. Yes, you could look at Argentina. And then also Malaysia, when it was threatened by Soros with his attack, his hedge fund's attack on the Asian tigers. And Malaysia was able to pull through that. Yes.
We are on the air with international law expert Francis Boyle here on Ideologos Radio and Ideologos Interview Series. We live in a global society today that is marked by increased government surveillance, police violence, and increasingly neoliberal and authoritarian world. In light of this, what can ordinary people do to not only stand up for human rights and the rule of law, but to also identify political and social movements that will truly stand up for their rights and not betray them?
Well, you just had a general strike in Greece yesterday. I thought that was great. I mean, it really shows the Greek people have had enough here. And you know, everyone taking the street. I think we need to see more of that in Greece. And then some type of leadership emerge out of those general strikes. It seems to me they're really in contact with the people. Syriza has forfeited, in my opinion, its right to lead the Greek people. They're working in cahoots with the IMF, World Bank, European Central Bank, Brussels, and Berlin.
Professor Boyle, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today here on the Ideologos Radio and the Ideologos Interview Series and for sharing your insights and experiences with our listeners.
Well, again, thanks for having me on, and I look forward to coming back to Greece sometime when I can fit the trip in. Great, great country. I learned so much from your people and the history and the culture.
Thank you once more. Greatly appreciated. Attention iTunes users, the Ideologos Radio is now just a click away. You can now download our podcasts and listen to the Ideologos Radio 24/7 anytime, anywhere. Check us out today in the iTunes podcast directory and in iTunes Radio. We just wrapped up this week's edition of the Diálogos interview series here on Diálogos Radio, where we spoke with prominent international law expert and professor Francis Boyle. The podcast of this interview will soon be available on our website, dialogosmedia.org, in the Diálogos Radio apps for Android, Kindle, BlackBerry, and Chrome, in iTunes, TuneIn.com, and a Windows Store, and in the Nobex Radio, WeCast, Player FM, and Stitcher apps. Coming up now here on Diálogos Radio is our commentary of the week. Diálogos Radio's Commentary of the Week. Each week, Michael Navratakis provides views and opinions on issues pertaining to Greece and to the worldwide Greek community. Coming up next, here on Diálogos Radio. It was a little over 3 years ago when I personally had the opportunity to travel to the heart of the beast, a week-long visit to EU institutions and to NATO as part of an academic program I was invited to participate in. This was a week that was full of misery for me, but which was nevertheless beneficial in that it was remarkably eye-opening. Hearing statements made by European Union and NATO officials about Greece and hearing their viewpoints about such quaint notions as democracy were truly telling and spoke volumes about their regard with which these principles are upheld within these institutions. At the meetings that I attended, a number of very revealing statements were made by the European Union and NATO technocrats who spoke to us, statements which I took note of, including, "The sovereign state is a 19th century construct and nothing lasts forever. Unelected Prime Minister Monti was the best thing that ever happened to Italy. There are regions of Italy which we wish Brussels could govern directly. The labor force should be flexible and should diversify. Mussolini dealt with the situation. We believe in a single European consciousness. Three reasons for the European economic crisis: bad design, bad luck, bad decisions. Greece. Period. Ukraine must be placed in the penalty box until it learns to behave itself." And when the United States ambassador to NATO asked if there were any Greeks in the room and I raised my hand, he told me that only because I was there, he would call Macedonia the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia. If anyone has any uncertainties as to the democratic leanings of the Nobel Prize-winning European Union and of counterpart institutions such as NATO, the aforementioned quotes should dispel any such doubts. And yet here we are today, 3 years later, 3 years further into an ever-worsening economic and humanitarian crisis in Greece, and NATO, along with its lapdogs such as Turkey, is here to stay. With the blessings of Greece's traitorous faux patriot foreign minister Panos Kamenos, NATO has officially been invited to launch patrols in the Aegean Sea between Greece and Turkey to guard against refugees trying to enter the European Union. We are talking here about a German-led NATO operation, one which began upon the invitation of Panos Kamenos, but also only a few days after the latest meeting between German Chancellor Angela Merkel with Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan in Turkey. NATO's warships will patrol the waters between Greece and Turkey and will be supported by planes monitoring the influx of refugees. According to NATO, refugees found at sea will be sent back to Turkey. This was repeated by British Defense Minister Michael Fallon, who said that the aim of the operation is to send the refugees back to Turkey. In the meantime, as part of this deal, the Greek military command will now be officially and completely subservient to the whims of NATO, with the Greek military having to consult with NATO before launching any operations of its own for any reason. As was written earlier this week by a journalist who managed to sneak onto a European Union patrol ship, nobody on a ship actually believes that the deployment of NATO has anything actually to do with migration purposes. Think this sounds far-fetched? Well, then consider this. On February 7th, the aircraft which was to fly Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras to Iran was forced to file a new flight plan after Turkey objected to the flight landing for a refueling stop on the Greek island of Rhodes and then crossing Turkish airspace on the way to Iran, on the basis of Rhodes being considered, quote, a demilitarized zone. As could be expected, Prime Minister Tsipras responded with, "Yes, my Sultan," and a new flight plan was developed for the flight to land banned in Egypt for refueling instead of in Rhodes. And if you still think this is all far-fetched and a load of bunk, then consider this. According to classified documents released by WikiLeaks, the oh-so-humanitarian, Nobel Prize-winning European Union has outlined the detailed plan, the so-called Operation Sophia, which outlines European Union military operations against refugee flows in Europe, while also detailing a plan to develop a, quote, reliable government in Libya, which will allow European Union operations to expand in the area. This report, dated January 29, 2016, is written by the commander of Operation Sophia, Rear Admiral Enrico Credidino, for the European Union Military Committee and the Political and Security Committee of the European Union. And perhaps not coincidentally, just as all of this has been taking place in the Aegean region, three members of Greece's Air Force lost their lives when their helicopter crashed headfirst onto the Greek islet of Kinaros. The helicopter had shown no signs of trouble prior to the crash, and there are many in Greece who believe that this incident was not merely an accident. A recent article by the Pravda Report, accurately titled The Silence of Greek Lambs, sums up both the dangerousness of the situation in the Aegean and the embarrassingly weak foreign policy, if it could even be called that, on the part of the Greek government. The article mentions that just on February 15th alone, the Turkish Air Force violated Greek airspace over 20 times between the islands of Chios and Samos and the islands of Limnos and Lesbos. In 2015, the Turkish Air Force violated Greek airspace a total of 1,375 times, with the aircraft in question being equipped with combat arms on 135 of those occasions. As the article goes on to mention, Greece has forgotten a time when hundreds of thousands of Greeks were expelled from Constantinople and Asia Minor, or the invasion and continued occupation of almost 40% of Cyprus by Turkish troops. Enormous oil and gas reserves were found in the waters of Greece and Cyprus, and coincidentally, of course, the European Union enslaved Greece at around that same time with its so-called bailout program. As a result, as the article goes on to say, Greece is the only country in the region today that has not affirmed its rights to declare an exclusive economic zone. And in the meantime, the IMF wants Greece to sell its state-owned oil assets, while Turkey said that if Greece continues looking for oil, Turkey will consider it a sign of aggression. That's a situation in Greece and in the Aegean Sea today, a situation which I can guarantee you won't hear about in The Guardian, The New York Times, the BBC, or NPR. And if you think Turkish violations of the Greek national airspace are something to be brushed off, consider that in 2006, such a violation led to the crash landing and death of a Greek Air Force pilot. Consider that these flight violations happened in a region that is home to a tremendous amount of commercial air traffic, particularly in the summer tourist period. And consider this as well. The oh-so-civilized NATO and the European Union have not ever bothered to put a stop to this aggression, just as they have not stopped Turkey's military occupation of Cyprus for 40-plus years. And yet, it is Greece that is the bad guy. It is Greece which, according to officials from Germany and Austria, and even the Czech Republic and Hungary and Poland and Slovakia, that should be expelled from the supposedly borderless Schengen zone, with these countries calling for a blockade of the refugees trying to enter Europe. What we hear, though, from the international community, from morons such as Yanis Varoufakis and from the media, is all about how Europe's stance, and particularly Germany's stance, toward the incoming refugees has been honorable. That Germany alone has taken in over 1 million such refugees. No one says anything about how valuables have been confiscated from many of the refugees entering Germany, about the arson attacks against refugee housing centers in Germany and France and elsewhere, and about these new military operations to stop the inflow of refugees who are fleeing the very war and conflict that the European Union, along with the United States, are waging. And no one has stopped to consider that Germany, with a very low birth rate, is looking to exploit the incoming refugees as cheap labor to keep its industrial machine humming. And while the international community pretends to care about the immigrants, no one has said anything about the fact that, for Greece, this refugee influx is not new. Greece has been bombarded by refugees fleeing Iraq, Afghanistan, North Africa, and other regions for at least a decade. And due to the European Union's absurd Dublin II regulation, these refugees are stuck in Greece, because the country of entry for these refugees is the country which is responsible for processing all of their paperwork and asylum applications. No one, not the concerned journalists and professional Twitterers, and not the northern European governments, has said a word about this inflow of refugees all these years. Nothing at all, other than to release human rights reports accusing Greece, the very country taking in these refugees, of racism, racism and xenophobia. This is the real Europe, one which claims to be borderless but which knows how to erect borders and barriers for others. It is time to realize a hard fact. There is no Europe. There are no open borders. There is no solidarity. There is, however, a European dream, one which is in fact a nightmare.
Follow Diálogos Radio on Facebook and Twitter and remain connected to all our latest news and updates. Check us out today at facebook.com/Diálogos Media and at twitter.com/Diálogos Media.
That was our commentary of the week here on Diálogos Radio, and coming up now is a special musical feature that we have prepared with music written and performed by Greek and international artists who have banded together to create an album in support of the refugees pouring into Greece and the help and support the residents of the Greek islands have provided to these refugees.
Hello, this is Nikos Fokas from Athens, and when Rebecca asked me to participate in the Cities of Your Eyes compilation album, I thought immediately of Krasin. Krasin was one of the first Russian icebreakers. She rescued a lot of people that had abandoned old home on the unfriendly shores of the North Sea islands. The song is an allegory featuring Krasin as a divine means towards one's realization of his true spiritual self. The vessel's journey into the frozen void is somehow parallel to the refugee desperate trip to the unknown.
Holy Krasin, guided by moon and star.
Europe, their destination, is way cooler and unfriendly. I feel that most countries have lost credibility in reacting logically to that. We have to deal with this on our own, and I think this album is one of the many ways to show solidarity and respect for our brothers and sisters that face this brutal war condition that made them leave their homes.
This is Anna Linardo. I participate in the music compilation In the Cities of Your Eyes with two tracks, Krasin by Nikos Fokas and Zona by Loop. This compilation is an effort to support all those people that arrive every day in our islands, exiled by war, all those people whose suffering and struggle is haunting our thought. This initiative gives the chance to all of us who can be on the front line of rescue and aid to express our solidarity practically. I wish it finds the widest response.
This is Gray Malkin of The Hare and the Moon. I was delighted to be asked to contribute to the fine In the Cities of Your Eyes compilation with our track Black Shores, which we recorded with the singer Alaska. Our track was specially written with the album and the cause in mind, and I wanted the song to reflect something of the desperation and sadness of the refugee situation. The lyrics of the song describe a liminal shore, which could be a place that is both the coastline of the Greek islands, as well as a place of the afterlife. For some, this is a fatal journey, and this is why I was so keen to do something and to contribute. These are people, families who just want to be secure, to escape war, brutality, and to keep their children safe. This is something surely we can all relate to, and the workers who are providing help and support to the refugees are doing an essential and hugely important job. Personally, I don't differentiate between groups of people. We're all human beings with the same right to life, security, and health. Donate to the groups helping the refugees. Please do something.
I'll always remember my first visit to one of those Greek islands. I was passing a taverna with a group of men sitting around a table outside, drinking ouzo slowly with plates of food laid out. They invited me to join them, invited me to share. My language consisted of signs and gestures, and when I offered to contribute at the end of the afternoon, they just smiled.
Not the faces, not the tears.
I love Greece. I love the people there, and I know about their hospitality and compassion. Sadly, I live in a country where compassion is viewed by many as weakness or stupidity. This ugly attitude is promoted by a government that's morally bankrupt and a media that screams out vitriol and hatred.
Stack the freezer, slam the gates, they say we're in a war. If we don't believe
that. I guess the only solution is a worldwide revolution in the wake of global economic collapse, where all indeed shall become much more equal. I think it's coming.
Take Diálogos Radio on the go with you with the new Diálogos Radio app for Android devices. Now you can listen live to Diálogos Radio and Diálogos Radio 24/7, download our podcasts, and read our latest articles, all in our free Android app, available now in the Google Play Store.
We just finished up our special musical feature here on Diálogos Radio with music written and performed by Greek and international artists in solidarity with the refugees coming into Greece and the people of the Greek islands who have been assisting these refugees. We heard music and sound bites from the following artists: Edward Kaspel with the song The Ministry of Disinformation, Gray Malkin and the Grayfield Recordings with the song Are You Safe, Loop and Anna Linardou with the song Zona, and Nikos Fokas starting us off with the song Kresin. This music is available on the album titled In the Cities of Your Eyes, produced by Anti-Clock Records, and we would like to thank Roberta Loftus for the music and for setting up the artist soundbites for us. Today's broadcast of the Diálogos Radio is just about ready to come to a close, but we will be back again next week, same time, same place, with another exclusive interview, as we will be speaking with former U.S. Undersecretary of the Treasury, author, and analyst Paul Craig Roberts, who will speak to us about the global spread of neoliberalism and how it has adversely impacted Greece. This interview is coming up on next week's edition of the Diálogos Radio and the Diálogos Interview Series. We will wrap up today's program with one final song, with Eleftheria Ravanitaki singing Then Apanda. Thank you for joining us once again this week here on the Diálogos Radio, and have a wonderful weekend.
Και λέω στο θάνατο θα φύγω. μεσημέρια που η καρδιά στεναχωριέται, που κάθε βήμα μου το βλέπει οριστικό. Της λέω αγάπη μου, η αγάπη δεν κρατιέται με ένα τηλέφωνο.